Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 23rd race of the 2024 Formula One season, the Qatar Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you, Mr. Billington. I have mixed feelings about this weekend's Grand Prix for reasons we will no doubt get into, but as Ellie May is not here, I do have to look smug on her behalf, which we'll get to later. It's a nice tease for then, but someone who doesn't look smug, which we can get into straight away, is the FIA, because, oh my days, we have news and it just keeps getting more and more out of control. Not that it's any of our business, apparently.
No, it is not the business of the drivers, certainly, as Mohamed Ben Sulayem pointed out this weekend. Yes, the FIA...
Count us amongst those.
Yeah, might as well at this point. I don't know. The rules seem fuzzy. Rory Marquez had to direct F1 and F2 this weekend after his replacement for Formula 2 was dismissed. Jeanette Tan was set to be Marquez's successor in the Formula 2 race director role, but was dismissed ahead of the weekend with no reason behind it made public. She joins recently sacked steward Tim Mayer in leaving the FIA in the latest wave of people to depart the organisation. Mayer was reportedly sacked by text because Mohamed Ben Sulayem took personal offence to something Mayer had raised in a post-race report. The crux of this is an appeal document filed by the Circuit of the Americas. Mayer represented the Austin organisers in a right of review hearing in a decision to fine them €500,000, with €350,000 of those euros suspended after a track invasion at the end of this year's race. COTA officials were not best pleased at the judgment, and given a similar situation at the Canadian Grand Prix, had led to only a warning. Mayer, who was acting in the appeal in his role supporting the organiser of the 3 Grand Prix in the USA, said that his involvement in the appeal initially led to him being removed from the stewards panel at the Sao Paulo Grand Prix earlier this month. Yes, no, last month, because we're in December now. It's moved so quickly. Yes. Then he was just simply fired as a 2025 steward this week, or last week when this all actually happened, because we're now on Monday. Mayer later told the BBC the official reason that will be given is that they felt there was a conflict of interest with the FIA as I'd led the right of review in my role as an organiser, but that is not why I was fired. Mayer said that Ben Sulayem felt an element in the right of review paperwork was a personal attack on him. I didn't write that part of the document, but it was my job to present it. So essentially, he's got in trouble for someone else's homework and been sacked by text, despite being one of the most senior and long-running stewards as well. And this sort of goes with the sort of ongoing calls from a number of significant personnel within Formula One, past and present, for there just to be one set of stewards. You don't have this rotating bunch. You don't get this in sort of inconsistency in sort of race direction and race control. But if anything, the FIA has now simply just doubled down on its nonsense.
Just all screams Mean Girls. And as entertaining a film as that was, that's not what the FIA in Formula One should be. And it's just ridiculous that I can make that comparison and it be accurate. And the fact that they're just being so flippant with it all, and MBS with his comments to the drivers and saying, oh, you don't tell us when you make changes in your teams, why should we have to tell you? It's not the same thing. The fact that you think that's a legitimate point to bring up as a rebuttal is concerning. And it just all screams of unprofessionalism. And like you say, we have this inconsistency with the Canadian Grand Prix to the Texan Grand Prix. And we see that again in how that trickles down with how the Grand Prix is then handled with the penalties, which we'll get to later, when you compare the same acts and the punishments allocated to those acts at earlier points in the season or in previous years, and you trying to figure out why is this worse than that previous incident? Oh, maybe it isn't. It's just wild inconsistency, and it just is on such unnecessary drama.
Yeah, it's a lot of sort of chaos that could easily be avoided if the FIA just grew up, or not the FIA, if MBS just grew up, and we'd see sort of far better
If he
leaders.
stopped living up to his second and third initials so much, it would be helpful.
Yeah, I think ultimately that's where it comes from. It's this strange cliquiness that just sort of he believes that he is insistently right about everything, and the net result is no, you're not, unfortunately, but he won't hear otherwise. And what we're starting to see is more and more rash decisions being made, and more people either leaving the organization of their own accord or being made to leave by text, apparently. Jeanette Tan was ideally placed. She was one of the sort of coordinators of the Singapore Grand Prix and was one of the sort of people who successfully sort of kept the race going and brought it onto the calendar. So she was an ideally sort of well-placed person with experience in Formula One to move into the role of race directing Formula Two. So I can't imagine why she was sacked. But yeah, there we go. Interestingly, Tim Mayer did say that she was probably the best placed person to step up to the Formula Two role. Great person to work with, one who listens, who takes information on board and understands the sport and the concept of going racing. So for all of a sudden, for someone so highly regarded to be sacked is unusual.
Somehow not surprising really at this point, given the slew of stuff that we've had in recent times and in terms of the race director as well. It feels like ever since Charlie Whiting passed away, we've just not been able to hit the nail on the head. And I know he trained up his would-be successor. That didn't last anywhere near as long as everyone thought that would. And it is one of those things where you'd think that instead of firing him back at the end of 2021, maybe bring a couple more people into the fold in terms of trying to have you can't replace Charlie Whiting, so we'll have two or three people to try and make up for the one big loss that we've got here, and you spread it out amongst them because it was clearly too much for one person. And ever since he's gone, it's just seemed to be even messier and messier and messier, and there doesn't seem to be a logical person at this point to jump in for it. I mean, Scott Elkins is someone who I rate quite highly as a person in that capacity. He's even if he wanted to do it, he's not going to want to do it full time, in that role because it's a long Formula One season, and obviously then do you do F2, do you do F3, do you do F1 Academy on top of that? Combine that with his duties elsewhere in motorsport, he's not going to. There's not enough of the man to make it happen, and it shouldn't all be on him anyway. But I don't know who else you would get, and who else at this point would be willing to come in when you think, oh yeah, I'll only be there 5 minutes because as soon as I do something, not even that out of place, I'm just going to get canned because, again, he's taken personal offense to something in a document. It's just looking for something to offend you at that point, and that is a little bit funny considering some of the stuff he criticizes the drivers for complaining about and the reasons behind it. It smacks a little bit of irony in a funny way.
Yeah, it's all a bit strange. And again, like you said, I think it's sort of almost become a poison chalice. People aren't going to be sort of wanting to move into these roles because that's the guy you're working under. There's no sense of job security if that's how he's going to behave as your senior operator. And yeah, I mean,
Either that or you do what you used to do if you wanted to work for Eddie Jordan and he says, I don't like you, you're not coming in, and you just turn up for work anyway. And she says, what are you doing here? It's like, I'm changing the engine. Like, I don't like you, you're not employed here. And you just keep turning up until he pays you. And
yes.
you're all right, really. You just need someone maybe to do that to him
Yeah,
and to
just
go,
someone
damn, I
who's
can't
still
do what I
got
want.
the all season pass and just keeps rocking up to the paddock. I mean, John Todt wasn't famously liked hugely as FIA president. There were some levels of controversy while he was there, but like that pales in insignificance. I mean, some of the FIA directors have been some
At least those
really,
were big problems, you
yeah,
know?
some of them have
It
been
was kind
really
of okay,
horrendous
fair enough,
characters, but they all
you've got fair
pale
enough
compared to
beef
this.
with them. But this, well yeah, because this is
It's all
it's so
unfounded
big because of
nonsense.
the pettiness of it.
Yeah.
It's big for the wrong reasons.
Anyway, we'll move from that quickly to some more positive news, which is Théophile Nel joins VAR for Formula 3 in 2025. He won the Spanish F4 this in 2023, and this year he's competed in Formula Regional Middle East and FRECA, coming 11th and 9th respectively. Also took part with F3 post-season testing with VAR at Jerez. So well suited to be joining Formula 3, and one of those ones that makes sense stepping up again, doing the ladder step by step, proving sort of relatively well enough in Formula Regional Middle East and FRECA, 11th and 9th, not the greatest finishing positions, but they are tumultuous seasons running outdated machinery at often sort of tricky circuits. So decent results, I think.
Yeah, for once recently seems a bit logical at least, so I welcome it. Not much more to add on that one. It's going to be see how he does next year. But again, like you say, it's nice to see someone coming up through the actual ladder and not skipping rungs of it.
Meanwhile, something else that seems incredibly logical and wholeheartedly good is Formula E is returning to ITV or ITVX, and it's free to air in the UK. More importantly, the all new season will be shown live on ITVX, with 9 of them shown on ITV4 and highlight shows after each race. So the full race package that we used to get when ITV did Formula One sort of thing. This follows it being put behind a paywall last year, which clearly wasn't good. Nicky Shields takes over duties as the main host, supported by Karun Chandhok, David Coulthard, and Billy Munger. So a decent lineup of hosts, and yeah, nice to have it back and available.
Yeah, it's good that it's back on proper telly in the UK at least. I think the paywall still exists for other people abroad, unfortunately, but we can't do much about that. But hopefully this will show the difference in numbers in the UK alone compared to what they're getting from their paywall, because I think that the paywall was a big misstep for them, and they did it way too soon in their kind of in their grand scheme of things in history looking at it. And I think that this deal that they've got with ITV should turn into a long-term deal so that they can actually build up a larger fan base in the UK at least, because they've skipped around so much. I mean, you look at it, what was it, BT Sports last year, it's been on ITV before, it's been on Channel 4, it's been on Channel 5, it's probably
Free to air on
maybe BBC
YouTube
at
as
some
well.
point, I don't know. Yeah,
I think
YouTube
BBC did have it for a
occasionally.
while, actually, yeah.
You kind of lose track, and it's kind of ridiculous because you, as a casual fan, you just want to know, okay, Channel 4, I've got that, it's on a bit during the year, I can check in and watch that. Oh, I've missed it. There's a highlights package. Excellent. That'll do me sorted. Kind of like how the European Le Mans Series and the World Junior Championship know that we do long races. So afterwards on YouTube, here's the film of the race, which is an hour, if you don't have 8 to spare to watch the full thing. Fair enough. I like that they do that. Why is that so, why is it taking them so long to figure out how to do that for Formula E, which is arguably bigger in a lot of respects, or is billed to be a bigger series. So I'm glad that this is happening. Hopefully, fingers crossed, it's going to stay this way for a while.
We'll see how it goes. I mean, obviously, this is purely UK-based news. So, to the 78% of our listeners that aren't based in the UK, screw you. Anyway, move on to some less than positive news, which was that Formula One Academy's second race in Qatar was cancelled. If you're following the feeder series action across the weekend, you'll have seen Abbie Pulling taking her title in Qatar. Fantastic race. Did exactly what she needed to do, picked up the points, and came home victorious with the championship. However, we went to go for the second race on Sunday, and a massive shunt in Porsche Super Cup wrecked a section of the barrier that took ages to be replaced, eating up time available for the second race. F2 was also delayed by it as well, so it was clearly a big job they needed to sort out.
Quite amusing. I thought, okay, they've cancelled the race, it'll be done by the time F2's gone. Went off, did a few bits and pieces, came back, went to watch F2. Like, they're still bloody fixing this thing. Christ, what? I want to see the. I've not looked at the crash wall. Better have been a serious ass crash. I'm like, what the hell happened to this wall?
Yeah, it was like proper concrete blocks shunted out the way and stuff. So I think it was a relatively high G incident. The fact is, it's
Good.
more annoying though, because it was wildcard entrant and promising driver Alicia Palmowski, who was set to start in P4 for the second race. And after she had had a really good drive in the first run, came home fifth, earning her 10 points. She could have had another
Didn't want
great
me.
batch of points that would have put her closer to the competition with the main field. If she'd finished where she'd started, she'd now be P12 ahead of full-time driver Tina Housman, with other wildcard driver Nina Gaidman as well. So there was a lot
Nina
at
Gaidman,
stake
mind
here.
you, who was harshly penalised back in Zandvoort for what was at best an ambitious overtake that didn't quite work out, and she got pummeled back, and she would have been well up there ahead of permanent drivers in the series as well. So it's like, why do we keep screwing over the wildcard drivers? We only get one shot.
Yeah, it's annoying. At least Alicia Palmowski may get a future chance. Obviously, the full grid for 2025 hasn't been confirmed yet. I mean, it begs the question, why wasn't the series able to be run later? Was there a gap between Formula 2 and Formula 1 that could have been used? It's just annoying that this is designed to be a platform to give up-and-coming female drivers a chance in the spotlight, and it's so easily disregarded on a weekend. Even the Sky coverage after race one cut away from pulling celebrations post-race to go to a replay of Ted's notebook from qualifying. That
Can I ask the
is
first
annoying.
question for you? There wasn't enough time between F2 and F1 this time. F2 itself was A, delayed because they were still fixing the bloody wall, and then because of typical F2-ness, turned into a timed race, so they were already hampered. And I'm pretty sure it's written down somewhere that on a Grand Prix weekend, you can do whatever you want before the F1 Grand Prix on Sunday in terms of an order for a schedule, but nothing can be after Formula One because Formula One's got to be the main event on the Sunday and that's got to be it. So they could have had it earlier in the day on Sunday for F1 Academy. They could have had it before the Porsche Super Cup. I don't know why they didn't in that way. I suppose they're trying to build up in that sense, but in this instance, it was just unfortunate scheduling. Like, with the Sky coverage, it was the same with YouTube on race one. It just cut. Seemingly, so we didn't have anything obviously on YouTube, we just cut. But you'd think on YouTube, why would you bother cutting it
Keep
at all?
rolling.
It's YouTube. And yeah, kind of really, really annoying because you're trying to see what you want to know what's going on. You kind of want that extra little bit. You have usually the montage of the race that's just happened that someone's quickly copying and pasted and cut together to show you all. Don't even get that, it just isn't done. And again, like you say, for a replay of Ted's notebook, considering how much else there is on Sky Sports the rest of the time that is basically just repeats of stuff from 3 years ago, you'd think they could afford to have an extra 2 minutes to just finish off actual live motorsport that they've got a dedicated channel for.
Yeah, it just a little bit grating. Like I wanted to see sort of Pin pulling and Vogue on the podium. Vogue didn't look too pleased about coming home third yet again, but I mean second place for
That's a bit
pulling
of
means she's wrapped up the championship without ever setting foot anywhere but the podium across the year, which is a damned
I'll say she
impressive
made
run.
her first overtake of the season this weekend,
Yeah, which was
which is bad.
really, really impressive. It was the first time that she hadn't started on.
Impressive and disappointing in some respects because it shows you how difficult it is to overtake in those cars.
Yeah.
But
It speaks both for the difficulty and terribleness of the cars, but also for the competitiveness of her season. Like she has been flat outperforming. Anyway,
dominant.
we'll no doubt get to Formula One Academy when we do a season review because they've still got one round left to go. P2 and the constructors are still up for scrapping. Meanwhile, we'll get back to Formula One and the sprint, where nothing much happened here. A lot of clean racing and Perez floundered just before the start line, wasn't it? Yeah, it was in the sprint where both Perez and Colapinto did a pit lane start, and Perez just wasn't paying attention, and
Yes, this
Colapinto got
was
him on pit exit.
quite amusing because Christian Horner, after the sprint, was talking about this, being interviewed about it, and the quote being from Horner, "When the lights go green, you're supposed to go,"
Yeah,
which
he
I
didn't
thought
have an
he is
excuse.
losing his rag quite a bit with him, just gradually, isn't he now? And he went earlier, I think the quote I saw from him is that we're going to support Checo until the checkered flag in Abu Dhabi. I was like, so you're not going to support him afterwards, is what I'm hearing there. Interesting. But we'll get to them later. The sprint race, yeah, I mean, it wasn't particularly much of anything, really. I mean, the one beautiful bit was the Hamilton v Leclerc battle. That was incredibly close, but respectable. And if that's a little tease of what we're going to get next year, then consider me a happy chappy there.
Yeah.
An awesome Piastri swap at the end seemed a little bit odd. I know it was paying him back for Brazil. And there's only, I think, a 1 point difference between first and second in the sprint. And now I just kind of really want Leclerc to beat Norris by a point at the end of Abu Dhabi, just because it would be so typical of Norris's season for him to then be the one time he does something that is kind of in keeping with the team and everything, and to try and help Piastri out, and it bites him in the ass. But yeah, another kind of waste of potential for a sprint there. Although Hülkenberg did finish ahead of Verstappen, and Verstappen was 19 seconds the lead by the time that the 19 laps come to an end, which, when you compare that to Sunday's performance, was quite a turnaround and impressive from Red Bull and Verstappen there.
Yeah, thankfully, obviously, the cars come out of Parc Fermé conditions. Red Bull found that simply the trick was raise the ride height a little bit, I think. Was it, I can't remember if they raised or lowered it. And what it did was just completely revolutionize the way the car ran. It was all of a sudden utilizing that floor far, far better. I think they lowered it, actually, if anything. And that just seemed to do the trick, for Max Verstappen, at least. Anyway, qualifying. And the important thing to take away from qualifying was a one-place grid penalty was handed down to Max Verstappen for driving unnecessarily slowly on a cool-down lap and impeding Russell somewhat. Russell vouched that essentially what it did was meant that Russell's warm-up lap, he wasn't on a push lap, he was on like a warm-up prep lap, meant that he wasn't able to appropriately warm his tires. So when his sort of opening sector for his hot lap was sort of not quite as fast as it could have been. It was slim margins. It was a lot of ifs, ands, buts, and maybes. So the penalty was appropriately slim, a one place grid penalty and a few penalty points for good measure. It's the first time we've ever had a one place grid penalty awarded.
It did make me laugh because I was like, we've never, as far as I can remember, we'd never had a one place grid penalty. I just thought, you get 3 or 5 or 10 or 20, and you end up starting back at turn 12 or something
At
like this, as we've seen
65.
many a time on Google Map. Yes. One just seemed a bit silly, especially as it made zero difference come race day,
But bear in
essentially.
mind, we've got an interesting bunch for the stewards and a race director that's sort of juggling series. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes that might have led to that. Anyway,
Again,
interesting.
just shows what we were talking about earlier with the FIA and everything there and the race directions. It just took the quote Miles' job is just an absolute shambles over there.
Yeah, absolute shambles. Anyway, it meant that Max was still starting on the front row just from the opposite side of the grid. Not that that mattered when we get into the Grand Prix, though, where all of a sudden George Russell learns that it really isn't that easy to keep P1 off the start against Max Verstappen. So all those times that we've mocked Lando Norris, all of a sudden George Russell finds much the same problem. And
I
interesting,
do think,
Russell
though, but
suffered a
looking at the start for all the races that we got to see across the weekend, P2 looked like the better place to start anyway. And we've seen this at several circuits across the globe that you're like, why is that pole position? Surely it should be the other side.
Out on the
Because,
racing line. Same as when
yeah.
Senna protested trying to get
Oh,
the
yeah.
grid
It did remind
positions
me
at
immediately of that. I was like,
Japan swapped.
I would be curious if they swapped it around. Would we still get the same thing? Arguably, if it's Verstappen, probably. But I'd just be interested to see what would happen and how that would play out.
I mean, interestingly, Russell had Verstappen in the first phase of the start. He had the traction, he had the drive. The problem was it was
Just the
the
second
0 to
phase.
100, it was the 0 to 200 kilometers an hour that was really the struggle point where the Mercedes bogs down a bit. I think it suffered a bit of wheel slip. And at that point, the Red Bull had hooked up, had a bit of downforce, and was just gone.
Do you know what it was?
What?
On the formation lap, Max was driving unnecessarily
Unnecessarily
slowly.
slowly, which meant that he had a window to catch up in and warm up his tires. We'll figure that bit out. Anyway, there is now some interestingly bad blood between George Russell and Max Verstappen. Though
Which I'm
I,
all here for because everyone's too nice to each other all the time, I feel
yeah.
like. Everyone's always too polite and too politically correct. And I was thinking, oh, you watched all the highlight reels from the 80s. Is that the last time we had a fight? We have a bit of that back, please. It'd be great
Yeah.
for Netflix. We're going
Although,
to do WWE style drama that Domenicali wants. Let's do it properly. Let's them have a smash a chair over each other's heads and let's get on with it.
I will say Max Verstappen said all these things without George Russell there. I reckon it'd be a very different thing. He wouldn't necessarily say that to his face. So I think it is again a bit of just sort
I
of
don't know. You give him a beer, he might.
it's the maybe it's in my mind it's possibly just the girls being girls. Anyway, we'll move on to the rest of this
We can have
race
that
as
as a
it.
caption for this episode, Qatar. Is it just a Mean Girls secret sequel?
Maybe it is. That's a good point. Anyway, we'll move away from the immediate start of the race up to turn one, where Hülkenberg loses it on the brakes and wipes out Ocon, sending the Frenchman into Colapinto. Both the Alpine and Williams retire. Hulk pits to cure a puncture. Elsewhere, Stroll understeers into Albon. The second Williams does all right here, actually. Spins around, but Lance picks up some damage and a 10-second penalty for good measure. Lance wants to retire the car at this point, but is instead forced into a pit stop, serving his penalty, and then retiring. Essentially, the Sergio Perez penalty dodge from what, 2022 was that?
Yeah, we've seen a bit of that this weekend. We saw that with Mercedes as well. But it's kind of, yeah, basically, so we don't have to do anything
The
next Grand
next
Prix. We're
race.
going to do it now,
Yeah.
which makes sense. But it's quite amusing that Albon thought he'd been driven into by Alonso for a second, and then his engineer kind of like, no, Stroll. And he's like, come on, Albon, you really thought that was going to be Alonso? Of course,
Yeah.
it was fucking Stroll.
You really thought? Anyway, while we're here, we might as well discuss Haas, Magnussen P9, and Hülkenberg, as we've just mentioned, a DNF.
Yeah, Hulkenberg's DNF obviously coming later on in the race, where just one of those unfortunate times where the car just got out from underneath him and off into the gravel, and that's him done, unfortunately. It could happen to anyone, and indeed did, because you wouldn't expect that to happen to Hulk, but it happens from time to time. And Magnussen was the Haas driver who actually got to steal the spotlight for a change. I think it's his fifth point scoring result of the year, which seems suspiciously low for him, but at the same time, he's not been in three or four Grand Prix for various different reasons. But he had a great race, I think, Magnussen, and I gotta say his overtaking, his battle with Albon getting unnecessarily penalised for that, which we'll get to in a bit, for me, was unnecessary because of Magnussen eventually getting past him and having one of the best team radios for driving past as he did that. And I'm gonna miss Magnussen when he goes in the season. I mean, again, I've talked before about Hulk deserving that Red Bull seat for a season just to see what he could do. You kind of want Magnussen in one of those top teams for a season just to see what would happen there. And you think if anyone could take it to Max Verstappen, who wouldn't mind the fight, go on, put Magnussen in a Red Bull. Let's just see how vicious Max can get in an F1 car.
Yeah, I think that's Magnussen's sixth point scoring outing this year. So he's on 16 points, and importantly, has 29.63% of the points holder. That percentage is important. We'll get back to that in a minute. But yeah, when it comes to Haas's points haul, Hülkenberg is 68.5 of them, Magnussen 29.6, and Behrmann 1.8 of the percentage points scored for Haas. But we'll get back to those percentages in a minute. Yeah, for me again, I think Hülkenberg tricky to really rate given the way it ended for him, but for Kevin again, he could be a driver I miss a little bit. However, I do have some good Kevin Magnussen news actually. If I go back to my 2025 Formula One Academy entry list, I can tell you exactly why. Because Kevin Magnussen obviously not racing next season. However, he is a huge supporter and sort of driver training coach for Albert Hurrup Larsen, who has joined the 2025 Formula One Academy. So we won't necessarily see the back of the Haas driver. He could be floating around for a little bit longer. He supported her through karting, and I wouldn't be surprised if he sort of continues to back her a little bit
I
more.
am as soon as we're done recording this, I think I'm going to try and find her karting race on YouTube. And if she's not incredibly vicious, I'm going to be disappointed in her driving style.
We'll wait and see how it goes. Obviously, Kevin's own children are a bit too young to start racing, so he simply found a surrogate child to sort of go imbue you with my sort of Nordic anger. Off you go.
Is how you say fuck off in different languages.
Yes, and how to somehow avoid getting FIA penalties for it. But yes, it
I think
was.
he avoids that by him looking at them and going, go on, try me.
Try me. Go on. But yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I'm gonna miss Kevin, man. Meanwhile, while we're here, we've obviously mentioned Stroll, who DNF'd at this point. So we might as well talk about Aston Martin, another race of two halves.
Yeah, Alonso just kind of waking up a little bit. Not necessarily that he was asleep, it's just that car has been not there for a lot of the season. And it's tricky with Aston Martin sometimes because obviously you look at their history as a team and the evolutions that they've had since the very, very beginning. You go back decades, they're in one of the strongest positions they've ever been in, and they're still an upward trend. And we got spoiled a bit with them last year that we maybe expected too much from them this year. But that being said, some of the fundamental issues that they still have haven't been solved. And Alonso was very critical of that during the race, coming down the start finish line in particular, saying, come on, guys, we've had this problem for the last 2 years. How have we not fixed this yet? And he was going to be quite pleased with the P7, but he's going to be wanting more. And this is one of those races where you want to be ahead of people like Gasly. And if anyone's getting maximum points out of it in that respect, it should be them. And that should have been the case in Brazil as well. And the fact that they've not been able to do that is a shame. But again, we've said it so many times before, it doesn't help when you're a team operating with one hand tied behind your back because you've only got one driver, really.
Yeah, you've only got one driver really worth entering into a number of the Grand Prix. Yeah, they did seem to have a variety of issues. And again, pace was the main thing. I was waiting until we heard the cry of GP2 engine, GP2 engine, because that car was phenomenally slow on the straights. I don't know whether they'd sort of misdiagnosed the aero setup for the weekend, but something just wasn't running right. But yeah, it's another weekend of Aston Martin being Aston Martin. I think they're lucky they came away with the 6 points for P7 for Alonso, really. That to me is the greatest surprise of all for them. Meanwhile, the
What's the
race.
difference between if Alonso had DNF'd or Stroll had DNF'd? You know that if it had been Alonso, they wouldn't have had those points.
Yes, yeah,
Bottas would have
ultimately.
finished in P10.
Yeah, which would have been a greater silver lining, arguably. Anyway, the race rumbles on while Albon's Williams loses its mirror, which after four laps, Bottas grows bored of the double-waved yellows, warning of it on the pit straight, so simply just drives over it, obliterating it into a billion sharp shards of carbon fibre. Hamilton and Sainz then get punctures from said carbon fibre. Lando also gets caught for not slowing under the double-waved yellows.
Caught by Verstappen, no less.
Yes, yeah, somehow spots him in his rear mirrors, all of a sudden get closer, going, well, we're in the double wave section. He shouldn't have caught up to me there because I know I lifted. So he clearly didn't, which is, again, great racecraft from Max Verstappen, a man who truly races inside the orb, looking in 360 degrees in every possible direction. And yeah, so Lando
Do you think
picks
he
up.
watches the sky stuff beforehand and goes, you know what? I will ride on board with one of these drivers. I'll go with Lando.
Yeah, maybe that's what he does. Maybe he carries like a
Just like a
small
little screen.
iPad.
It's not, he's not going through menus trying to find an optimal setup. He's just got Lando's thinking, I'm gonna fuck this guy up.
Yeah, maybe that's like a secondary secret feature built into the little screen on his steering wheel. Is it ride on board with, perhaps I'll go for Lando today. Or maybe, or Russell's a bit close. I'll swap to Russell, see what he's doing through that turn. So yeah, Verstappen dobbs Lando in. He picks up a 10-second stop and go penalty, which is a big penalty to serve, especially when you have to do it in three laps after it's given to you. More importantly, this penalty is given to him after the safety car, despite the fact that he'd committed this all before the safety car, and it would have been ideal for him at least to have been given it and served it before the safety car. Ultimately, they give it to him after the safety car when everyone is bunched up. So what do? The penalty hits you harder. You drop from P2 to P15, last on the track, which is ouch. So we might as well jump at this point into McLaren.
Even for me and my standards, that penalty on Norris was a little harsh. I thought at most it would be a 10-second penalty, just kind of added on. You do it at pit stop or is added on at the end of the race. And despite a lot of what I say about him, it was a very good recovery drive from Norris afterwards up P10. The justification for the penalty being it's a safety thing. And we treat it very seriously, very harshly. We've not seen a stop and go penalty for a long time, I don't think. Talking years. Kimi Räikkönen was the last one to get in Spa or something when Verstappen had DNF'd somewhere and Kimi just didn't care. So it was just going about his business. But yeah, damage limitation then really for Norris at the end and Piastri coming home in P3. I love again that he was disappointed with this because it shows that even at this stage of a very long season, I know that they've got a constructors fight for, but how disappointed he seemed. I love it because he's here to win and maximize opportunities, and anything less than what he can absolutely extract from the car at the circuit, given the opportunities available, he's not happy with it. And he doesn't necessarily beat himself up about it, he's just annoyed and he just gets back on with it. He doesn't chastise himself in public. Maybe he does it in private. I don't know. Maybe Weber's got a nice thing of you can have the annoyance of 5 seconds, but then you get back onto it. He's not as much, obviously, with the emotions on his sleeve as Lando is. He's not emotional on his sleeve with anything, let's face it. He's probably Kimi Räikkönen's secret love child with the emotions there. But I did love that after we were saying he needs a good race or a better race, he then gets onto a podium and goes, not good enough. I need to, we could have won that. And yeah. That's why Piastri is a champion to be at some point.
It's good that Norris is still being sort of driven like that and still sort of, in the nicest possible sense, beating himself up over those things. Just checking, because I'm fairly certain. I think you were close with it being a Sauber that was last given a stop and go penalty, which would have been Giovinazzi in 2020. I think Hamilton also got one as well for Monza when they both drove in when the pits were closed. And that was when we saw Hamilton fighting his way back through. The problem is he then ran into traffic essentially at the back of his own teammate, where the two cars were so equal. I'm trying to figure out if Albon got one at Imola this year as well. Infringement, car 23 released in unsafe condition. Let's see. I don't know if he got a 10-second penalty for that or if he just
So that would have been harsh to give him a stop go penalty for
penalty
that.
for car in an unsafe condition. Let's see. No, it was 2024 Imola Grand Prix, a stop and go penalty. Yeah. Front right wheel was too loose, and yeah, there we go.
Again, harsh to penalise Albon for like, I mean, he's not the one putting on the tyre, but there we go.
Yeah, there we go. That answers the question. Anyway, yeah, for McLaren, oh, they had the chance to cinch the title this weekend, but didn't. Piastri is still struggling with tyres on surface-specific tracks as well, which is easy for me to say with my throat as it is. And it showed this weekend. Previously, certainly last year, Piastri's greatest hurdle was getting used to tyres graining up, getting used to tyre degradation, the way that certain circuits impact tyres more than otherwise for the Formula One cars. And going back to the very strange sort of aggressive tarmac of Qatar was sort of put pay to his progress this season. Norris's penalty for me was a bit careless on his behalf and a bit on the behalf of the team as well. Like when you're going through that sector, your team will have warned you about it. The lights are late flashing when he gets there, but immediately the next thing he passes is a marshal with double waved yellows, like physical flags out as well.
Well, it's a start finish straight. You've got a series of signs plus the marsh horses kind of what's
Yeah,
your excuse there?
it depends where your eye line is sitting at that moment in time, because if you're looking broad out of the sides, you'll catch the light and then the flags. But if you're looking pretty much dead ahead, all you will see is the green light board just ahead of it. So this is sort of partly on him, partly on the team going, watch
So
out,
you're also
double yellows.
trained as an F1 driver, and this isn't your first season.
Yeah. So for me, this is sort of carelessness on both his behalf and on that of the teacher. The on-off nature of the double waved yellows as well, because they were sort of switched on for a bit and then switched off and switched on for a bit and then switched off. They were all over the place. So it wasn't particularly easy to communicate either way. In hindsight, it's easy to say that though, getting that call and ultimately, if in doubt, just lift. But it's easy to say that in hindsight because you know that lifting is going to cause you less damage than a 10-second stop and go penalty. Ultimately, a bit of a harsh call, and I don't think the penalty was awarded at the right moment in time. It did feel certainly post-race and certainly now a bit race fixy to sort of try and throw that at a certain point in time, try and hamper a driver
Not
to
as
get
if
them in a
we've had
certain
that at
place.
any point this season. Brazil sprint comes to mind as a not obvious example.
Yeah, and again, I'm glad that I don't work for the FIA because I don't feel that I could safely raise that without being fired by text.
You'd have been fired long ago already for that one,
Yeah, they would
for
have been
something
fired for other
completely
reasons.
unrelated.
Yeah, that would have been other reasons why I'd be gone. But anyway, have we got any more to say on McLaren? Because it was a great recovery drive from Norris, ultimately, fighting his way really
But
all the way back through.
they still look set to be the favourites for the constructors. They need to have a really dog shit weekend next weekend for Ferrari to clinch it. But at the same time, Ferrari historically have been stronger in Abu Dhabi. We've not seen this McLaren in those kind of on that circuit, let's face it, in a good way for a long time. So while they can do it, it's risky. And I feel, and we'll talk about this a bit more with Ferrari later. Norris may lose his position in the championship, but they may still win the constructors. And it's
Yeah.
going to be one of those things where both of those teams get a victory, but at what cost?
Yes. Yeah. Importantly, Ferrari do close on McLaren this weekend as well. They did come away with slightly
21
greater
points
points
now.
haul. Yes, they've closed that gap a little bit more. So they're eating into it just that little bit. And it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top. I mean, you look at their sort of point spread and the way that it's distributed amongst the teams. McLaren and Ferrari have both done pretty well with having fairly equal performing drivers, actually. Norris 54% of the haul, Piastri 45, Leclerc 55, Sainz 43, Behrmann 1% of the points at Ferrari as well. So he's doing pretty well at having just a little percentage here, a little percentage there. But anyway, that's McLaren out the way. We'll move on to the rest of the race. And after the safety car, which was thrown out so they could clear the chance to clear up that mess, Perez loses drive just as it goes green and spins. Hülkenberg then suffers his spin, which puts him in the gravel, beached. Another safety car is then triggered, and the RBs and Albon at this point pit for softs. The restart is clean, and the soft drivers get a better launch. Albon clips Magnussen going through turn one, and they have a good old scrap. We've already mentioned Magnussen's parting phrase as he eventually fights his way back past Albon when the soft tyres die away. At this moment,
Yeah, as
Lewis.
Jenson Button said, he clearly said, I'm off.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly what he said. At this moment, Lewis Hamilton gets noted for speeding in the pit lane and gets a drive-through penalty for it. He throws up a bit of a fuss about this. He goes, well, retire the car. There's no point going on at this point. They go, no. We don't want to have to serve it next race, the same as Perez 2022 Japan, and as we'd already seen. So they go, okay, fine, right. So he'd sort of at one point threatened to simply park the car and turn it off. So
Well, you've
they
been
said,
having a bad race up to that point, and you can kind of sympathize a little bit. The guy's just trying to drive and race, and any time he makes any bit of progress, something happens, and you go, "Oh, come on!" And he's at the end of a long year, he's getting tested in ways that he just doesn't need, and you sympathize a little bit, but it's also just very uncharacteristic. It feels like at the same time with Lewis Hamilton, we know, and just kind of shows how done he is with F1 for this year,
Yeah.
and it's odd because we again. We get drive through penalties more often than we get stop and go penalties, but I don't feel like we've had a drive through penalty for a while either, or it doesn't feel like it. But I
I don't
saw it
have
and
one
just
of
thought,
those on deck, I'm afraid.
I just, no, it's all right. But I was more associated them with IndyCar and NASCAR at this point because I see them so frequently in those races now, and I've been consuming so much of both of those series and feeder series this year that I'm like, oh, drive through, that's fine. And they're like, oh, but wait, this is F1. Damn, this is more serious.
Yeah. Because
I'm
also,
like, oh,
do they have
nice.
different pit speeds as well? So it really impacts you in Formula One as well.
Yes, that's the thing there. So it was unfortunate, but again, it was. I'm glad he continued and he didn't retire because, as we saw towards the end of the race and where he ended up finishing, if he'd had a couple more laps, he could have potentially taken that P10 away from Norris as well. So he could have still got points. It just shows the driver that he is, that even when he doesn't want to be in that car, he is still better than at least half the grid without even really trying.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to his mental fortitude. I think there's still something to be said for his driving style. Certainly isn't something that works with this style of car. We haven't seen him on perfectly fine form since this sort of change to ground effect cars. And yeah, it's never been the same Lewis since the start of 2022. And I don't know if we're going to see a change of that as we go into the sort of coming seasons. It'll be great to
I
see the
hope so.
battle he has with Charles Leclerc. I hope we sort of see him change because he's always been a driver that's been adaptable, but he just hasn't adapted greatly to this. Regardless, at this point, having mentioned Perez, we might as well talk about Red Bull. And Verstappen P1, amazing. Perez, DNF.
Yeah, there's a lot of Tale of Two Halves going on today, and this is another one of them. Verstappen just he took a commanding win, as I predicted, man. And it felt like Verstappen of old in that sense, and I say of old of like the start of the year. Perez, on the other hand, amusing in the sprint race. His supposed reasons to why that whole pit lane fiasco happened was that they were using it as a test session. He was just letting Carlos Pinto get ahead of him for that reason. Like, sure, buddy, whatever you need to tell yourself. That's clearly what that was. And someone else expertly memed he was clearly just following his sponsor's rule of have a break, have a Kit Kat. I could still see signs replacing Perez next year and Williams keeping Colapinto in play or replacing Colapinto with someone else. Because I don't think Lawson or Tsunoda will replace it. Tsunoda, it'd be interesting to see him, but he's going to give Max too much aggro, so that's not going to happen. And Lawson's not ready yet. Ricciardo, it's not going to happen, I don't think. Signs is the next logical option because you think then of who else would you get, and it's kind of you getting into your K-Mag and your Hülkenberg territory, but I don't know if you want to risk that. Bottas has said they're not interested in me. I can kind of understand why. And no one else is really feasible. I'd say, again, Colapinto, but that'd be a bit of a risk. I'd just keep him Williams and go for Sainz because Perez, you've got to wonder that. Yeah, even if this was just simply losing drive, there's bad timing. There's bad timing for him. Let's face it, you were having a stronger weekend of it up to that point in terms of the Grand Prix itself. Is a P6 or a P7 finish with one race to go where we don't know how he's going to do next weekend really going to be enough to save your career when you're at this point? Whereas you'll get to in a second, Jesse, with your fact of amusing family merry-go-rounds with how it's related to Max. Is it going to be enough to save your seat when you're that far down in both the driver's standings and how that affects your team's position in the constructors, your team who has been dominant for the last couple of years?
A team that has now finished P3, and I think this sort of marks Verstappen out as one of sort of a small handful of drivers that have won the championship with a car that wasn't a championship winning car. But more importantly, he's also won it with a not even top five finishing teammate. And we'll get to that in a good second. We've already mentioned Verstappen getting catty over Russell's qualifying hold up, and obviously, but somewhat oblivious to the nature of glass houses when it comes to calling out Norris's double wave yellows, which I think is amusing. On Perez, though, in 2020, Albon scored 32.9% of Red Bull's points. This is why I've been mentioning the percentage spread so far, which, though not great, is more than Perez has done this year. Currently, Perez has just 26% of the points for the team. To put that in context, Alonso and Stroll have the same point share, so he's doing about as well as Stroll is at Aston Martin, as do Tsunoda versus Ricciardo. And given that Tsunoda scored points since Daniel Ricciardo was dropped, means that Danny Ric was dropped with a higher points share at his team as well. Perez at the moment can finish no higher than eighth, which is where he currently sits, which makes him the second lowest second driver to a champion after Jos Verstappen finished P10 behind Michael Schumacher at Benetton in 1994. So funny how it all goes around, but we've got the Verstappen on the other side of the coin this time round. But yeah, it's just a baffling instance. And interestingly, there are talks that potentially Isaac Hadjar might be moving to RB next season, which suggests that
Please
one of the
no.
drivers at RB will be moving up to Red Bull.
If that happens, two things on that one actually. First of all, this means that one of Perez's kids has to get into F1 so that they can then win a championship so that someone else can be terrible teammates to him so that we can keep that cycle going.
God.
And yeah, I don't make the rules. If Hadjar actually goes up into RB next year, kind of hope it's Lawson who goes up into Red Bull then, just because of how insane the team radio and the actual fighting, cage fighting, we're going to get between Tsunoda and Hadjar. Because if anyone could bring out Yuki of old in terms of aggressiveness, both on and off track, it's going to be Hadjar. I mean, pick almost any race from F2 this season, and you will understand why I'm saying this with
No,
Hadjar.
this is fair, but I think Lawson would have the much the same effect as well. Like, you've only got to see how Liam Lawson came in and immediately started picking fights with Fernando Alonso, Kevin Magnussen, pretty much Perez. He's had an ongoing scrap with Perez since he returned to the sport. What I think is more interesting, however, is
That's just
obviously the
because you're
fact
under his seat, though.
that, yeah, for one, but also the fact is that, like, there is half a point separating Hadjar from the lead of the Formula 2 championship as it goes into its final round. It's Bortoleto, Hadjar, and after a
And Aaron.
fantastic weekend, Paul Amron, who we'll get to in a bit later as well. So obviously there is a risk that Hadjar might win the championship, and you can't go back and do it again after you've won it. So there is no reason, even if he comes a very close P2, what's he going to gain from doing another year in Formula 2 is obviously the question that's being asked at Red Bull and RB at the moment.
Or you just do what you do with anyone at Red Bull when you're not sure what to do with them and chuck them in Super Formula, don't you?
Oh, but then eventually they get bored of that and find their way to accidentally race for McLaren in IndyCar. Like, come on.
Again, I don't make the rules.
I mean, we haven't heard from Ayumu Iwasa for ages. Like, have we checked
Well,
Hillary?
he doesn't exist anymore. He
Yeah.
never existed in the first place.
He
Poor man.
was sent to Super Formula and has since vanished. Like, the
He's
poor
done a
guy.
better disappearing out than Table Chair did.
Yeah. The table chair didn't vanish. He somehow ended up at McLaren and then sort of somehow became David Malukas. But anyway, I think there is logic to what Red Bull might do with Hadjar. I don't
I
think
think if
it's.
they do this, though, it's going to be a repeat of whichever year it was when it was Gasly, Fiat, and Albon, and it's all just going to get messy again, and they're not going to have anyone
2016,
properly until
17,
26.
18.
Yeah, it's going to be that whole farce all over again.
It's going to be an interesting farce. I'm excited for it. I love the drama. I live for the drama. Give me that spicy tea. But at the same time, I don't think it's going to be potentially what Red Bull or RB needs as they both try and fight their way back through the championships. And I say fight their way back through the championships as Red Bull. Yeah, they're in P3 at the moment. They've got to fight their way back through next year. Anyway, we'll go back to the race. Albon defends from Magnussen using the old Verstappen method and then gets an investigation for it. Magnussen, as already mentioned, gets through as Albon softs degrade. Norris fights his way back through and into the points. Gasly somehow has spent all of this time in fifth and then crosses the line in fifth, defending from George Russell the entire time, which was chef's kiss, really impressive from him.
Carlos Sainz. Defending from Carlos Sainz because
Was he
George
defending from
Russell
Carlos
finished ahead
Sainz?
of Gasly.
Oh. Either way, defending from Carlos Sainz. I'm reading too many lines of my notes at once. Anyway, Gasly finishes ahead of Carlos Sainz, rather. That'd have been better. Boom. There we go. Obviously, we've just mentioned Albon again. We might as well touch on Williams quickly, where becoming a Williams fan is now comes free with antidepressants. I don't know.
Seemed a bit of a harsh penalty on Albon. Wrong place, wrong time as well for Colapinto. But my silver lining is that at this rate, they'll have used all their bad luck up, so they won't have any for 2025. Fingers crossed.
2025 Williams Constructors Champions.
I'm not saying that much good luck, but I'm just saying not this much bad luck.
I mean, there was a great moment when Max Verstappen afterwards was told that it was Albon's mirror, and he went, "Yeah, no, makes sense. The Williams guys have had to rebuild that car 50 times so far this year." I was like, "That is harsh, but not, ultimately not untrue." 16, I think, after this weekend, now 17 big shunts for the Williams team to have to try and rebuild, which
Which I
is
didn't like the way that came across because it implied that it was Colapinto, and it was like Logan Sargeant was a
no.
big part of this
Logan
team.
did a lot of those. Admittedly, Colapinto did it twice in one weekend just to try and balance the books, but like at the same time, it's still not a great statistic. It means one of every other weekend you're having to rebuild that thing. Regardless, George is hit by a 5 second penalty, but was conveniently 7 seconds ahead of Gasly, so was untouched there, and so the Constructors' Championship rumbles on. However, as the evening wraps, rumour quickly emerges that Alpine are dropping Ocon ahead of Abu Dhabi for Jack Doohan. By Monday morning, though, this was confirmed as true. Ocon leaves, having served as Alpine's longest running driver, bagging the team one win, three podiums, and 247 points since their 2021 debut. Reports suggest, from this is from a photographer at Alpine who I happen to know, that this was actually Ocon's choice to leave, as he was torn between doing the Abu Dhabi with the team, or the postseason test with Haas. And it looks like Alpine wouldn't have allowed him to jump ship immediately for the test. It's the same way that Ferrari are letting Sainz just go to Williams afterwards, which is odd that Alpine have got this restrictive thing in there.
It's the same thing with Hamilton and Ferrari. He's not able to get into the car until early next year because Mercedes are making him work right up until the end of his contract so that he's got to do press stuff with them. It seems a bit odd.
So it's a bit odd they've tied him into this one, but I think obviously there needs to be like a sort of definitive gap between which Ocon could sort of draw the line and go, "Nah, I'm done there." And that was obviously going to be pre-Abu Dhabi. And I think he's opted to move now and make the most of it. And I'm thinking a bit skeptically about this. Who are Alpine fighting for prize money at the moment in the championship? Haas. By
I have seen this conspiracy theory by you, and I think that's all it amounts to.
Shoving a barely tested rookie into his seat for a race, is Ocon inadvertently helping his future team claw back past his former team, ensuring his seat next year is more securely funded? Nonetheless, Doohan joins the impressive list of drivers to debut at Abu Dhabi, which to date runs as one, Will Stevens. I don't know what he's doing these days, but he's not in Formula One, so.
Somewhere though. I think it's Goodwood. It's the last time I saw hide or hair of him.
Will Stevens currently races in World Endurance, Jota.
I've also probably seen him there.
That might be why you've heard him. Also does
I've heard
a
of him
bit of
because of
testing.
F1, but yes.
He's test and development driver for McLaren as well.
There we go.
So he might have run in a couple of McLarens and stuff at Goodwood as their sort of showcase driver. But there we go. So speaking of Ocon, we might as well jump into Alpine.
Yeah, again, like I was saying before, it's 10 or two halves. Ocon just very much done with his career with the team very quickly there in the end. And yeah, Gasly with another impressive drive. If Alpine don't improve, maybe he's a candidate to join GM or Cadillac, or and Cadillac rather, in 2026. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Doing, I'm looking forward to seeing him in the car. It's kind of frustrating in some respects because you've obviously get a Grand Prix weekend and then you've got to wait months until you can do it again properly for full time, but you're not going to say no to it. There's obviously P2 in F3 Asia in 2020, then P2 again in Formula 3 in 2021, and then he finished in P3 and F2 last year. So he's had to do a bit of Piastri and wait a year in order for him to get a full time go at things, but I'm hoping he'll have the same kind of a season that Piastri had last year in some respects, but maybe not on the same level because of obviously Alpine being Alpine, but as close to that as he can get. Ocon, meanwhile, he's been with that team a long time, so it's kind of amusing in some respects that after 106 Grand Prix with four podiums, including that obvious win in Budapest, that this is just how it finishes. It's very David Coulthard with Red Bull of, oh, I'm out. Never mind, I'm done. At least he's coming back next year with a different team. He's not just out and done with Formula One completely. Because otherwise, that would have been a rather unfortunate exit for him after so long with that team and then with Formula One.
Yeah, it's an odd one for that exit, but yeah, it's a tale of two very different cars as well. Important to remember, Ocon was running a lot of old spec parts, while Gasly was the recipient of a lot of upgrades, and clearly those upgrades do work. Gasly had a great weekend of it. Skeptic, probably the same skeptic that I was earlier, would also say that this was done to further drive a wedge between the pair performance-wise, so the team could almost justify dropping Ocon for Doohan as well, giving the Aussie rookie some track time ahead of 2025.
You've been watching too much TikTok.
Maybe Ocon got unlucky with the early contact, though it wasn't really his fault at all. He was just wrong place, wrong time. Gasly's run, though, was really good, and his defense on Sainz proved that not only has the car stepped forward, but he's still got that ace defensive streak and some sound pace. And I'd agree with you that if a seat becomes available at a slightly better team, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Gasly jumping for it because, yeah, there's a
This is
fight
an
in his belly
unfortunate thing,
still.
like I say with Red Bull earlier when talking about them, that because of the brutal nature of that team, you had perfectly good drivers getting churned out after they've barely been given a chance at this top team because they weren't the next Max Verstappen. And it's for shame that we still haven't properly seen what Albon's capable of in a lot of ways because he's a better driver than he was back then because he's been allowed to flourish a bit more at Williams, but obviously Williams don't have the car for him. And Gasly's getting to that point now where he is deserving a seat in a better car, and if Alpine can't give it to him, I don't know who will. Because you, I mentioned about GM and Cadillac, but we don't know what kind of car they'll have at the gate, and you know that there's not really going to be any room at any of the bigger teams that could give him that, and it's this frustrating thing if he's going to fall into that same category of Hülkenberg and K-Mag and Perez back before he joined Red Bull. And does he have to wait another 5 years towards the end of his career, maybe, to get an opportunity for a season or two to be in that top team? And if he does get the opportunity then, and not anytime sooner, will he have missed the boat in some regards and not be able to live up to the potential that we know that he's potentially got within him? It's this very frustrating thing that we see so often in Formula One, but what can you do?
I think his best bet is just sort of stick it out, wait it out, and just hope. But I mean, you say about him sort of becoming the next sort of Hülkenberg, Magnussen, Perez does spark the interesting idea if he goes back to Red Bull, but he's now the Perez to Haas Verstappen. And that would be a very, very interesting,
That
aggressively
car is not
French
going to
lineup.
be.
I don't know.
It's not happening.
I predict a wild future at Red Bull. Anyway, there's some more important news coming out
I
of Alpine.
digress. You've not been watching too much TikTok. You've been smoking some stuff again.
Wrong week to stop sniffing glue. Anyway, there's been some more important news coming out of Alpine this weekend. As we've already hinted at, Paul Aron has now joined the team. The ex-Mercedes junior driver has joined Alpine as their reserve driver for 2025, which is interesting, of course, because obviously Doohan moving up suggests that. Also, Paul was announced relatively early on in the weekend, so clearly they knew what they were doing.
Oh yeah, I
But
love how you just—I could see
the
the cogs
clogs, the clogs
turning
in
in
my
your
head
head.
tippity tapped away there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sort of like piecing that all together. I was like, yeah, but of course, Doohan's moving up next year anyway, so they need to announce anyone anyway. But
It's like getting a robot online. I'm seeing him think.
yeah.
It's happening in real time.
Oh, yeah. I can feel the thoughts happening. It's strange. But importantly, obviously, Aron now steps up as the reserve driver for Alpine. And of course, this follows on from a great pole and a feature race win in Qatar in Formula 2. But importantly, Aron races for Hi-Tech. Who was the former team principal for Hi-Tech, who is now the team
I certainly
principal at
guess.
Alpine? There is a little bit of
Oliver
an
Oakes.
overlap there, which would possibly suggest as to why the likes of Kush Maini and Victor Martins were not chosen.
The other
Kush Maini
interesting
for
thing with
obvious
that
reasons.
is, I think it was at the start of this year. It's been a long year, as we mentioned quite a bit, but Paul Aron was in the Mercedes Driver
He
Academy,
was dropped
got dropped,
mid-season,
then they
yeah.
signed Antonelli. Not too long afterwards, so it seemed to be, we don't believe in you anymore, we're going to go for this kid. And now Aaron's threatening to steal the F2 championship ahead of the Wunderkind. And if anyone needs an appendix out at Alpine next year, he's going to be in there and he could be up against Antonelli. And you kind of want to see him beat him in a session or so and to see what happens there. And it's funny how these things kind of play out.
Yeah, some FP1 sessions next year are going to be interesting. If you've not followed Formula 2 this year, one, shame on you. Two, you're missing out because it has been fantastic. We'll move into some of the other teams that we haven't touched on yet. So we'll go in sort of remaining championship order. Ferrari and Leclerc P2, Sainz P6.
Claire now only 8 points behind Norris in the championship, and I'm very much looking forward to see how that goes. As I was alluding to earlier, McLaren get P2 in the constructors, Leclerc may get P2 in the drivers, and I think it would just be satisfying on a number of levels, but also just because of the trolling aspect that we could do for Formula One there after they've hyped up this Verstappen Norris title battle for so long, and then you look back from the future at this and go, but Leclerc finished P2. Why is all this fuss made over Norris? He didn't even finish second in the end. And you go, oh, did we misjudge this? Yes, you did. Sainz, on the other hand, heck of a roller coaster racing. Quite impressive to finish P6 after all of that. I'm guessing he had some kind of damage on his car, and that's why he couldn't get past the Alpine of Gasly, because normally you'd go A.
I think
But
Gasly was
I
also
think he'd
racing
be.
very well. He was fully
Oh,
deploying
yeah,
and
don't get me wrong.
recharging that battery.
He
Like,
was doing an excellent job, but normally you'd be surprised that he's able to keep someone like Sainz behind him. But considering the roller coaster that Sainz had this weekend, he's going to be happy he got P6 after all of
think
that.
they'd shaved a bit of the floor off when it had that puncture. I think it was running, it'd run a little bit low and perhaps lost a bit of floor downforce. But at the same time, Gasly was operating at 128% to try and stay ahead of that Ferrari. Well, I think the Ferrari was running at 100% minus damage. So, yeah, slightly unfair tables, but a good result for Sainz. And I know that Sainz will be looking forward to Ferrari potentially taking the championship because it will be great for him to walk away from Ferrari, knowing that he was part of the team that helped lift Ferrari back to their first constructors' championship since what, 2008, seven. So that would be great for him to walk away from. I think as a team this weekend, they very much sort of just about doing what they needed to, and they really lucked into that Lando penalty, I think, overall. Otherwise, a clean weekend in Abu Dhabi could see them take the win.
Yeah, like I said, we know Ferrari can be strong there. We don't know what McLaren are capable of, and we've had that occasionally where we were thinking that with Vegas, where, oh, we've not seen McLaren here, they could be a threat, and then they were just nowhere. And if they have that kind of a weekend, and Ferrari have their kind of a weekend, it's theirs, and they could get both, and that'd be incredible for them.
It's important to remember that Abu Dhabi is a lot faster than it used to be. We've got those big long straights along the back section. Turn five is now that big left-hand sweeper. And we've got the reprofiled banked, was it turn nine, 10 section as well at the top end of the track. So this is looking like more of a Ferrari circuit than it might have been a McLaren circuit in years gone by with those sort of heavy braking zones and the sort of slow to medium speed corners.
If McLaren do win the Constructors' Championship in Abu Dhabi, however, it will be the first time they've won it in quite
Since
some time, because the last time they
1998.
won it, Oscar Piastri wasn't even born.
Yeah, he was what? He's a year 2000 baby, isn't he?
2001.
Oof. And McLaren last won in what,
And it will have
1998?
been 3 years since they won it last at that point already, and they had to
Oh.
wait for this boy to grow up for Mark Webber, who probably started around the same time that Piastri was born, to train up this driver just so they could maybe win the Constructors' Championship.
Why didn't Mark Webber start in Formula One? What was his racing debut in the sport? Was he was a test driver for Arrows in 1999. His first actual race seat was Minardi 2002. Interestingly, actually, Mark Webber was a pointless answer on tonight's Pointless on BBC. It was drivers who
Sad. People should know
originally.
who he is.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. It was drivers that have won a just a, won a Grand Prix, and I was quite happy that I got a point with Carlos Reutemann, and so I was
If they're
happy I
not
got a
getting
pointless
Mark Webber,
answer
they aren't
there.
going to get bloody Carlos Reutemann, are they?
No, Mark Webber was a pointless
Jesus.
answer, as was Carlos Reutemann. There was probably
Ridiculous.
quite a
Well, yeah,
lot of.
that was implied that he would be one, because if Mark Webber isn't, Christ, they're not going to be.
Not getting Carlos Reutemann.
Oh.
Somehow, somewhat, two people named Emerson Fittipaldi, though, which is fair considering he did win two championships. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked. Next on the list is Mercedes, Russell P4, Hamilton P12.
They're the two halves, don't you know?
No.
Not very much so. Russell with an unexpected P4, being better but also slightly worse, I suppose, than we would have thought in many ways, but he'd probably take it after all of that in some respects. Hamilton, another driver with an absolute roller coaster of a weekend. He, as we mentioned before, seems so done with F1 this year. But he said after the race that he does want to finish on a high for the team in Abu Dhabi. So there was talk that, oh, he's not going to make it there. He's just going to give up the ghost. But he wouldn't do that to the team. I'd be very surprised if that turns out to be the case there. And yeah, just unfortunate because you can tell he just wanted to get on with it. He just wanted to drive, and stuff just kept getting in the way throughout the entire weekend, and it was really frustrating for him. Especially because the new white race suits that they've got for these two races, at least, it reminds me of when you see a character towards the end of a TV show or a film series, and they're finally in that final appearance of being fully evolved. Like they've got that last superhero costume, they've got that last look to them, they come back to life. And it's like you're in your final phase as a character, you're going to be this collectible item that we can get from the shops in an action figure. He seems to be there, like he's finally himself after all of this. He's finally where he needs to be. And then this happens, like, you bastards. Is red actually his final color? Probably. We'll go to red.
No, for me, what it is it's George Russell racing in a
Going back
white
to
suit at
Williams.
Mercedes. No, what it is Max Verstappen being terrorized by a Mercedes driver in a white suit. Welcome back, Nico Rosberg. But
I was going to say Will Smith 2016.
no, not quite that far back. But equally, I mean, equally at the same time, Lewis Hamilton being terrorized by a Mercedes driver in a white race suit in a Mercedes with blue gloves as well. It's Nico Rosberg again. Cannot shake the man. Anyway, yeah, Lewis really downbeat this weekend, just wants to get this all out of the way, clearly. And I don't think that's a great mindset for going racing with. I think there is still, in my mind, a genuine risk he just won't take to the grid in Abu Dhabi. Given that this weekend he was threatening to pull in and shut the car off himself post penalty, I wouldn't be surprised if he does the formation lap as sort of like a final
I won't
celebratory
be
lap,
surprised.
pulls in
I
and gets out.
will. I will. Wait a minute. Which way does this bet work out for me if I'm correct? I need to work that out.
Are you going to bet that he?
I want you to owe me a beer, essentially, was what happening here.
You're going to have to bet counter to me. So I'm going to have to definitively say whether or not I think he will take to the grid or not. And then you could bid or bet whether or not you think he counter to me or bet a different aspect of the race.
I bet counter to you, but I want to specify that if you're saying he doesn't do it, does he do the formation lap and then go in, or does he do one racing lap and then go in?
I think he'll do the formation lap and then go in.
Okay, so just to cover myself off, so if he does do a racing lap and then go in, you still owe me a beer.
If he takes it's lights out and away we go, I owe you a beer. It doesn't matter how many
Okay.
laps he does after that,
No,
I owe
that's fine.
you a
Bet to
beer.
bet. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah. If we see him doing the formation lap, if he's waving and then he pulls in, I'm
I'm
the
going to
one,
message you on
I'm
that
the recipient
54
of a beer.
going. Does this count?
Lap 54, that it will count. I can attest to you that the moment that Harry Benjamin says it's eyes to the lights and foots to the floor, boom, there you are, you've won the bet. If Hamilton is on that grid. If, however, he doesn't take the racing start, if he pulls into his grid box and simply does not accelerate away at the start of the race, I
Considering
claim
where
the
he
bet.
probably will qualify, that's dangerous if
Yeah,
he does that
midfield.
deliberately.
Yeah. Yeah. So
So I don't think he'd do that.
I don't know. He's very done with this racing series. We'll wait and see. But yeah, I
Not
think
done with everyone else's. Not to go full kamikaze.
go complete Mahavira Gunathan. There we go. Right. So I
Not
think
backwards.
is that have we got anything more to say on Mercedes?
No, not really.
No. Hamilton sad, Russell fast. I think that's all that needs to be said. Next on the list is Minardi, Tsunoda P13, Lawson P14. This isn't really a tale of two halves. This is just a tale of a bold call, but it didn't play out for them, did it, Con?
Tale of woe and missed opportunity amidst the chaos, and that's all I have to say about it, really.
Yeah, the high deg nature of Qatar just meant that the 17-lap sprint to the end was too much for the soft tyres to take. They looked really racy for about four laps, and then unfortunately those tyres just fell apart. Despite the low fuel loads, the dirty air of racing in a compacted pack just meant that those tyres had nothing to do and all of a sudden fell to pieces. It could have been so good, but it wasn't. Speaking of it could have been so good, but it actually was for once. Steak. Zhou P8 and Bottas P11. It was almost so good and almost prediction points for me in the
No, it
end.
wouldn't have been because you said double points
Ah,
in both
no,
races.
it was going to be point. It was going to be, yes, yeah, stake scores points in both weekend events. Damn.
Yeah, no, I did check that thinking, I want this to happen, but I don't want Jesse to get points. And then I saw it, like, oh no, he said about the sprint, we're good. Never mind. I can let Bottas do it now. But this is why I want Lando Norris to lose P2 even more now, because what kind of a cruel bastard do you have to be to see Bottas ahead of you in P10 and think, I'm going to overtake him and steal his probably only opportunity to get one more point in Formula One? Just brutal, because you nearly had a double point finish and so close and yet so far, and Joe going over the line in P8. I don't think I've ever been that happy to see a driver finish in P8, and I'm not even like a massive stake Bottas or Joe fan, but it was just that underdog why we love F1 kind of story again of, after we've predicted it so many times this year, and then you nearly get it this weekend, we've finally got a version of it where they're not going to be completely pointless by the end of the year. And importantly, Joe is up in the standings with points. Bottas now moves ahead of Sargeant in the driver standings for the first time with one race to go. A driver that's not been there since Zandvoort, for crying out loud. And yeah, just a really great story for them, and something we needed a bit more of, and shows that while we were hoping they'd capitalize on the chaos somewhere like Brazil, at least they were able to chaos on capitalize, sorry, on this kind of chaos in Qatar. And you know what? I still really like their livery.
Yeah, I've just sent you a great screenshot of Bottas's latest Instagram post, which I think really encapsulates his emotions following this. I did see a great TikTok this evening of someone on the airport shuttle bus from the terminal to the plane who was just like, "Oh, that's Valtteri Bottas," just him looking pretty glum, sat in the corner of an airport transfer bus waiting on his flight to Abu Dhabi. And I was like, "Oh, there is another man that is just waiting for this season to be over." But yeah, for me though. Stake this weekend, joints. What a great result for me. Driver of the day too. He thought the team were pulling his leg when they said he had won driver of the day. He was like, "Oh, points, yeah, P8, great." And then they're like, "Yeah, you got driver of the day too." And they're like, "What?" And the best thing that makes this such a really good weekend for Stake, however, is one, they had been religiously practicing their pit stops ahead of the weekend. Like they were there early, they were doing the practice pit stop tests. They wanted to make sure they got this right because they felt that this was going to be a good weekend. Also, Zhou's parents were at the track, so they got to see their son score points in Formula One and win driver of the
Finally.
day. And for me, that is the perfect little story out of this weekend, is getting is
Well,
knowing that's happened.
especially if they don't turn up in Abu Dhabi, what a hell of a bookend for them turning up to Grand Prix to watch, because the first one was Silverstone 22 and he yeets off into the barriers, massive shunt. And then the last time they see him, he gets driver of the day, he gets points, he saves the team, drives up to the distance. If anyone's not turning up in Abu Dhabi just because he knows he got better, it's going to be him. He's like, I've done what I can do here. I can't do anything else.
I mean, it is the perfect little story that's sort of going to perfectly sort of encapsulate, round out his racing career. I think the rumors of him moving to Ferrari as their reserve driver and
Reserve.
test driver are still sort of pretty valid. I think obviously he'll bring a lot of Chinese money to the team. And again, solid enough if you just sort of send him out for just sort of going round and round and round in circles on his own, just for doing testing bits. Obviously, Schwartzman no longer doing that because he's gone off to IndyCar, isn't he?
Yes.
However, I will say I was joking in the preview episode when I said that Sauber's upgrade package was suited to the final two races of the year, but it seems that I was seeing through the realms of
Under
Formula One.
very specific conditions.
Very specific conditions, but I was clearly seeing through the realms of F1 bullshit to those hitherto unknown and somehow
It
predicted something spectacular.
seems very Avengers Infinity War and Doctor Strange going, we've got one scenario where this works,
I viewed the
and we've got to try
64
it.
million alternate ways that this plays out, and I've figured it out.
We've got to
And
wait for Albon to lose a wing mirror in the penultimate race of the season, and then you're going to drive over it, and it's actually going to help us. Trust me.
yeah,
You're like,
that's our
all right.
Thor losing his eye. That's Albon's wing mirror is Thor losing his eye. It's all building up from here. So we're now into the end game, and this is where it gets exciting. Anyway, that's the teams of the race recap sorted. We'll move into winners and spinners very quickly. And Ellie Mae is not with us tonight, but she has submitted her winners and spinners. Her winner is Carlos Sainz. Yeah, pretty decent recovery drive from him. Good little all-round race from him. Not a bad weekend. Timo, your winner.
I could hear her from a distance when he drove over the bit of debris and got the puncture. I can hear the ping Like Obi-Wan can hear Alderaan hang out through space. It's very sad right now. As for me, I've gone Pierre Gasly just because it was a Grand Prix where you've got to capitalize as best you can when the opportunities come your way, and he did the best job of that at the teams that you're not expecting to normally be in five. And he's doing this pretty well at the moment. I mean, he bounced back after Vegas because that wasn't his fault. That was just engine going pop. And Brazil was spectacular from him. So this, excellent. I'm kind of optimistic for him for Abu Dhabi. And I hope I haven't jinxed him by saying it. Sorry, Pierre, if I have.
I force you into making an early prediction for Abu Dhabi?
No.
Gasly on the podium? Go on, do it, do it,
I'm
do
going to
it.
go outrageous with all of them, but I think I want to go even more outrageous. So, because I'm not
Oh,
planning on getting any points in Abu Dhabi, so I'm going to go
Gasly
all out.
win?
Let's not go too crazy. That's Bottas territory.
Gasly P2. Meanwhile, my winner goes to Abby Pulling. I think, yeah, we'll touch on it again when we get to F1 Academy. But yeah, absolutely the driver of a champion this season. There was a lot of pressure on her going into this year because, of course, it was her second year in F1 Academy. So it was a case of I need to win this year because I need the prize money. I need the race for next year. And yeah, she knew the pressure was not on her from the drivers around her. It was on her circumstance, and she sort of fought through that and came through it and came out on top. There is a great interview with her and Rosanna Tennant on one of the BBC Checkered Flag ones, which I would recommend going back and listening to because it is a really good insight. And again, it also speaks of the actually really good support that Alpine seemed to have put behind her and sort of properly backed her this season, which is nice to hear that Alpine are taking F1 Academy that seriously and properly supporting their drivers. So for me, yeah, Abby Pulling is my winner this weekend, despite F1 Academy only getting half of its scheduled races done. Meanwhile, spinners, Timo.
Minardi, just because every other team managed to capitalize a little bit on everything and they didn't.
Yeah, that is very fair. Ellie May has for some reason picked me as a spinner.
I know the reason here, but I will hear your spinner first because it works as a perfect segue for in a moment.
Okay, mine is the FIA simply because how can you go from race week to race week and keep looking worse and worse and worse? This is abysmal. Ellie May,
It's
your
impressive.
spinner, please. Yeah, it is impressive. Ellie May, your spinner, please.
It's you because cast your mind back to the start of this year when
Oh,
everything
God.
was fresh and predictions was nil-nil-nil for all of us. And you said, and I more or less quote verbatim, I'm going to bring it to you this year.
Oh, God.
And we're in predictions review. None of us got points for pole position. I got a point for Verstappen win. Ellie May, however, got 2 points for Leclerc P2 and Piastri 3-3, which I was annoyed at because I had it the other way around and was urging Piastri to overtake him so badly and he couldn't manage it. And Ellie May also got a point for Norris' fastest lap. There's a name notably absent once again from this predictions review because it's you for not getting any points. So a bit like Minardi and a bit like the FIA, it's getting a bit laughable now at the silliness of how bad you're doing here.
It's
And that is why
rich.
you are the spinner for this weekend. And I'm
Look,
not saying this, I'm saying the reasoning why she's chosen
yeah,
you.
if it was Ellie May saying it directed to my face, it would be a bit more
And hence, to go
poignant.
back to the very start of this episode, when I say I have to look smug, this is why, because
Yeah, if it
she's
was,
royally whipping you.
yeah. She is on a total of 33 points at the moment. I'm on a total of 17. However, the guest is on 13 and you're on 10. So
Yes, but
I'm struggling
if
to
my
take it
predictions
from
had
you.
come, well, just bite down a little harder and I'm sure you'll manage. But I think if half of my predictions come right this year, we'd have had a much more interesting season. So I've not been taking this too seriously. You have, for the most part.
Lot of my predictions have been quite serious. I
You've not
have.
even been giving predictions for every Grand Prix.
No, I have been a. In some instances, I have been a little more out there with them. But yeah,
For
I
someone
don't
who
know.
said they'd bring it, there's a lack of anything being brought.
Yeah, I haven't brought a great deal. Although for some reason I did get a point for Logan ahead of Albon for Japan. Now, that did earn me a point, which was for a mad prediction
Because
that I will take.
Albon DNF'd on lap one.
Not the point. Anyway, moving on from our predictions, where there were zero for pole position, one for you for Verstappen's win, two for Ellie May for getting the rest of the podium correct, and 1 point for Ellie May for getting Norris with the fastest lap. We'll go to our fantasy Formula One review, where for Qatar, Noah Hunger 3 came out on top, 257 points. Noah Hunger Noah Hunger, 256 points, and Take a Stroll, 255 points. Meanwhile, my podcast team came P4, Team Nitrocross P12, Ellie Mae's podcast team
I
P18,
got a
and
Renaissance Nitrocross. Two good races in a row. I'm not used to this from them. I don't know what's going
yeah,
on.
out of nowhere, Ellie Mae's podcast team P18, and Lada Formula One team P37.
Pretty much what it says then. The Lada Formula One team still got Ricciardo. It's really not helping them. Yeah, overall, though, it's a different story again. Forsberg and De Steiner out in the lead, just tracking 5,000 points with an extra four on top in P1. Take a Stroll, 4,996 points. They're still quite close for that battle with one race to go. And what's the racing point in P3 with 4,945 points? On the curve, meanwhile, is the highest placed of all our three teams, of all our teams that we've got available to us in P10, JB Racing in P13. Ellie Mae's podcast team P20, not a million miles away behind one of yours, I think, in P18 as well. And the Greatest Moustache is obviously in P37, still a good couple hundred points off its nearest rival, and I dare say may not win the championship this year.
No, is that really my highest team? Jesus.
Yeah, you've been
I'm slacking. JB
living.
Ra yeah, JB Racing P13. That is not good. I think Doors by Gunterstein, Take a Stroll, and What's the Racing Point are all run by the same guy as well. So yeah,
That's unfortunate.
John Cilla. So yeah.
We can Photoshop the Presidential Medal of Honor
Oh,
name
the
to be
Obama
congratulating
handing
yourself.
himself. Yeah,
Yes,
we don't know
handing
what
yourself
John
the
Cilla
medal.
looks like, so we're just going to have like anonymous cartoon character.
We'll assume it's Barack Obama under a suit. We'll just have the stock photo of it.
If Barack Obama is playing our F1 Fantasy League, which probably also means he does listen. Hello, welcome, thank you. Took all of my
You
strength
start a
out of you.
brewery.
Yeah, start a brewery. We'll read you out again in the next episode. Anyway, that's all we've really got time for on this week's episode. It has been a long one, despite there only being two of us, so it should, in theory, been about 33% less talking, but here we go. In the meantime, before we're back in about 2 days' time for an Abu Dhabi Grand Prix preview, Timo, where can the people find you?
Instagram would be the best place at the moment. T.Overs.Ledger on the curbs. I'm going to have some driver interviews out for on the curbs and for the Nitro Cross podcast this month. Maybe a couple of bits in the pipeline as well, if people can get back to me before Christmas, because that's getting a pinch point at this point. So we'll see. And if not, I'll have stuff in the new year. But that is the place to find me in the meantime for all of that and the plethora of interviews with anyone and everyone from the past. God knows how long I've been doing this now, a while.
4 years? You were definitely doing it while we were at Drive Tribe.
Oh, yes, it's Drive Tribe's fault.
Yeah, 4 5 years then, easily. Half a decade, let's call it that. In the meantime, if you want more from me, you can of course find me writing for Classic Car Weekly and on the new Classic Car Weekly podcast each week. And if you want even more from me, you can find me on social media as at Jesse on Cars across Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Blue Sky, Threads, pretty much most of the Twitter replacements and every other place. And obviously, as you maybe tell by the sound of my voice, you can hear me filling in for Bob Harris on Radio 2. That is an extremely, again, niche British reference that not many people will get. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again very soon for a preview of the final round of the 2024 Formula One season, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.